Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
A quick warning before we begin. This episode will contain the names of people and places that are entirely fictional, which I'm sure to mispronounce often. I hope you'll find it in your heart to forgive me. Enjoy the show.
Between the years when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of, when shining kingdoms lay spread across the world. Hither came Conan, the Cimmerian, sword in hand. It is I, his chronicler, who knows well his saga. Now let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
From Stephen or Else Media, this is Hither Came Conan, the podcast that's tired of saying the same thing over and over again. I'm your host. My name is Stephen. And yeah, you get in kind of this rut where something works in regard to your introduction to a podcast. And next thing you know, you're just saying the same exact thing each and every week. Did you hear that? It's hard to believe that. Every once in a while, I sound like I'm having a Peter Brady voice change thing happening, but that's not what this episode's about. No. I'm here today. This episode was created specifically for you so that we can keep talking about that Dark Horse run. And so today, we're going to look at Conan issue number 3. This issue hit the stands on Wednesday, April 28th, 2004, it sold for $2.99, and it is entitled At the Back of the North Wind. It was written by Kurt Busiek with art by Kerry Nord and Thomas Yates, letters by Richard Starkings and Comicraft, and the colors were by Dave Stewart.
Into the boat!
Previously in Conan number 2. Conan is all alone on the field of battle. Everyone else is dead. Half-naked girl comes over to him. He chases her down, tries to rape her. She's using magic on him because she wants to trap him so that her brothers, a pair of frost giants, can kill him, carve out his heart, and then they can give it to their father, the god of the north, Ymir. Conan kills the frost giants, and the half-naked girl, whose name is Atali, she is saved from being raped by Conan when her father intervenes, transporting her away with a lightning bolt that knocks Conan on his ass and knocks him out. Conan wakes up surrounded by his Icer friends. He tells them what had happened. They all think he's just a madman. He's hallucinating. He got hit in the head. And even he begins to believe this until he realizes that he is still holding her thin gossamer veil in his hands. Conan number 3 opens in the wild. Conan and the men of Asgard, following another day of kicking some Vannerman ass, have made camp for the night. Conan sits alone at his own fire, using tools loaned to him by Njord to repair his horned helmet, which was dented in the previous issue. Njord swings by to check in with the young Cimmerian, and the two get along famously, insulting each other the way bros do when they can't say, "I love you." They soon begin laughing loudly as Sajarl watches from afar, rage dancing across his eyes. The next morning, the warriors are on the move once again, heading east in pursuit of Tyr and his Vannerman raiders. Conan proves that he's a fast learner when, after just a few weeks under Gorm's tutelage as a wilderness tracker, points out a tiny bit of ice that could only have been chipped from a horseshoe, which confirms that they are on the right track. As they continue their chase, Sajarl approaches Conan and apologizes to the barbarian youth for his unreasonable hostility and asks the Cimmerian if he might tell him more about Hyperborea, expressing a false curiosity and interest in the land and wondering how Hyperborea could exist within an endless summer, considering how far north it is. Conan, falling for Sajarl's fakery, explains that the land of Hyperborea is shielded from the cold by a fierce north wind. Sajarl appears enchanted by the notion, voicing a desire to see the land for himself. Then, acting as if the idea just popped into his head, Sajarl tells Conan that he and his friend, Einar, will be venturing to a village in northern Brithunia to party once this business with the Vannermen is complete, and that Conan should join them as they party down. Conan passes, saying that Hyperborea is his goal, but Sajarl presses on, pointing out that this Brithunian village will be full of, quote, ale and strumpets. Well, that's all Conan needed to hear, and he quickly agrees to go with Sajarl and Einar to Brithunia before he moves on to Hyperborea. That night, the men of Asgard make camp, and as they settle in, eating and drinking around the fire, Sajarl spies on Conan, hidden in the dark on a hill above the camp. Sajarl's buddy Einar asks him why he's so obsessed with the young barbarian. After all, this little war will be over soon, and then Conan will be on his way and out of Sajarl's life. But Sajarl isn't buying it. He knows that it's just a matter of time before Njord tells Conan what Hyperborea is really like, and that Njord will try to convince the Cimmerian to stay with him. No, Conan's not going to leave, and so Sajarl knows he's got to do something, telling Einar that he wants to ensure that the young barbarian finds his way to Hyperborea and experiences its many wonders. In fact, Sajarl has a buddy in the Border Kingdoms who sells grain to the Hyperboreans, and he knows that his Border Kingdom bro will help Sajarl and Einar sell the Hyperboreans something else, something they will be glad to have, and that Sajarl will be glad to be rid of. The next day, the fighting commences, and it's not long before Tyr calls for a truce, offering himself up as a sacrifice to save his people, telling Njord that he hands himself over freely, that they can kill him, but only if they promise to keep his people alive. Njord agrees to those terms. It's as they're making ready to leave, their Vannermen captives in tow, that they're suddenly attacked by a group of giant, pale-skinned, half-naked men. During the attack, Sajarl and Einar cowardly creep off, escaping to a bluff overlooking the battle. Meanwhile, Tyr begs Conan to free him and his men so that they can help. Conan agrees, and soon the Æsir and the Vanir are fighting side by side against this new threat. Conan soon learns that these pale giants are Hyperboreans, just before Njord is struck down. Tyr, seeing Sajarl and Einar hanging out on the bluff above, points them out to Conan, suggesting that if Conan could get to them, the three could then attack the Hyperboreans from outside their ranks and possibly punch a hole through their line big enough for the surviving Northmen to escape. Conan makes for the bluff at once, climbing to Sajarl and Einar, calling out to them for help. Sajarl then shows Conan his true colors by kicking the Cimmerian from the bluff and watching him fall into the raging battle below. Fury quickly builds within Conan, but before he can let it loose, he's struck on the back of the head, and everything, for him, goes black. As the issue ends, the pale-skinned Hyperboreans gather all of the Northmen who are still alive, but unconscious, Conan among them, and places them all on sleds before taking them off into the ice and snow, leaving the Cimmerian's horned helmet behind. All right, so before we get into my favorite bits and my thoughts on the issue, I wanted to spend a little time talking about Hyperborea, but I didn't have enough time to compile all of the information that I found in a way that would allow it to make sense. I mean, I didn't even think about the fact that the Hyperboreans in this issue are just completely different than the Hyperboreans we met in the Marvel run back in Conan the Barbarian number 3 from November of 1971, The Twilight of the Grim Gray God. And I found that a bit curious. So I started to do some research, which y'all know I hate to do that. And I just found all kinds of stuff that was, I don't know, it's pretty interesting. But since I was doing this at the last minute, there was just a lot of information to comb over. And I didn't really have a chance to, like I said, get it all put together in a way that would make sense. But in issue number 4, since Conan will be in Hyperborea, I'll just work on getting that all put together. And we'll talk about it when we talk about issue number 4. How's that? Until then, I'll just say, yeah, they're completely different. It's just a strange thing for Dark Horse to change about the Hyperboreans, especially since with what little time I had to just kind of browse through some stuff on the internet, it sounds like the Hyperboreans of the Robert E. Howard universe, the Robert E. Howard Conan universe, the literary universe, the short stories, they appear to be similar to what we got in that issue of Conan the Barbarian from Marvel. So I'm not really sure why we get such a radical change from the Marvel run to the Dark Horse run, but yeah, we'll talk about that when we talk about issue 4. So you'll just have to wait in anticipation on the tips of your toes before we get into that. But hey, while you're waiting, how about we do Steven's favorite bits? All right, we'll start, as always, with the cover. This is another Joseph Michael Linzer cover. It's just gorgeous looking. It's beautiful. And yet at the same time, I'm like, eh. I mean, I don't know. I can't explain it. These covers are okay. I mean, I don't know how to really say it. They are obviously created by a skilled craftsman, somebody at the peak of their talent. And they look really good, but they don't really do a lot for me. And I can't really explain why, so I'm not even going to try. Right away in page 1, we get to the first of my favorite bits. Conan sitting on a bench in the Icer camp. It's night, there's a fire going, and Conan is hammering out the dent that was put into his helmet in the previous issue. And Njord comes up and he's wondering, he asks Conan, why are you spending this time doing that? You're spending a lot of time, you're spending a lot of energy for some old helmet. There are dead people strewn all over the place because they have made camp near the site of a battle they had that day with the Vannerman. And he tells Conan, there are helmets all over the place. Just grab a new one. And Conan tells him that no, his father was a blacksmith, that he made that helmet with his own hands shortly after his day of manhood. And that he always taught Conan that a man who treated his tools well would get good service from them in return. And then he says something that's a little bit curious. He says, besides, these battered horns have a sentimental value to me. And I'm wondering if that is a nod to the helmet that Conan wore at the beginning of the Marvel run, which was also a horned helmet, but the horns stuck out the front. And we learned through Roy Thomas's book, Barbarian Life, a literary biography of Conan the Barbarian, Volume 1, that I think he said Barry got sick of the helmet. He didn't like the helmet. He thought it was, even though he was the one that designed it, he got sick of it pretty quick. And it was 4 issues in that they got rid of the helmet. So yeah, I don't know if that's a nod to the helmet Conan was wearing at the beginning of the Marvel run, but it's got to be. Just the fact that really when you think about Conan, when you look up Conan the Barbarian as far as artwork, the general, I guess, generic look of Conan is bare-chested in his little fur trunks with a sword or an axe or both, and he's not wearing a helmet. And so the fact that the Marvel run began with him wearing a helmet with horns on it, and the Dark Horse run begins with him wearing a helmet with horns on it, it's got to be related. My next favorite bit comes in the next scene where Conan is proving to be a quick learner, you know, in regard to his tracking abilities. I enjoy this because they're making an effort here to point out that A, Conan is young. He doesn't know a lot. He knows some. I mean, obviously he left his village at the age of 16. He fought in the Battle of Venarium. He can hold his own and he knows some skill at tracking, but he's learning more. And when you think about the fact that, you know, eventually he's going to become a king, they're showing us here within this first arc that Conan is, He's not just out there walking the earth and getting into adventures. He's learning. He's growing. He's picking up all the skills that he's going to need to carve his path through life that will conclude with him becoming the king of Aquilonia. And I like that because if you think about the Conan that we have here compared to the Conan that is a king that we're going to see in The Phoenix on the Sword, for example, he's a completely different dude. Sure, he's older, but he's gone through a lot of shit, right? He's learned a lot of stuff. And in The Phoenix on the Sword, for example, Bob Howard points out that he may be a king. Aquilonia may be a civilized kingdom, but at heart, he's still a barbarian. But he has grown civilized. He's gotten wise. He's got all these skills. He's grown, obviously. And I like that we're starting to see that with little bits here and there, starting with this scene where we see that he's learning the art of tracking. Now, as he is pointing out that he's found this ice that is chipped from a horseshoe, and that points in the direction of where the Vannermen are going, Gorm tells him that he has sharp eyes. Njord tells him fine work. And Sajarl is just pissed off about it all. He's not happy that Conan is doing so well, that he's basically caught the eye and the heart of Njord, that, you know, their leader Njord is very, very impressed by this young barbarian. And he starts complaining under his breath as they're riding away, and his buddy Einar comes up and gives him some shit for it. You know, Sajarl basically says something that, you know, paraphrasing, Njord is going to trip over his own sword to kiss Conan's feet. And Einar's like, and Hango is soft on him too. A good thing he'll be traveling on, or our next chieftain might be a... And that's when Sajarl cuts him off and he tells him, close your face, Einar. Einar's like, what? I'm just saying. And Sajarl says it again. I said, close your face. I don't know that I've ever heard that phrase before. Close your face. I guess it's the Hyborian version of shut your mouth. I'm going to have to tuck that away in the back recesses of my mind and pull that out at some point when I'm yelling at somebody, close your face, because I think it's pretty awesome. Hither Came Conan will return after these messages.
Hello, how are you? This is Sean Merrick from the podcast Worst Collection Ever, where myself and my wife, Jennifer Stansfield Merrick, talk about the weird, the funny, and absolutely insane comic books in our comic book collection. Are they good? Probably not, but we're going to have fun anyways. We took a little break, but now we're back with brand new episodes, so please check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, even check us out on YouTube, Angry Hero 79. You can subscribe, you can review, you can rate on there, and we would love to hear from you. So check you then.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
And now back to Hither Came Conan. I like the bit just before, you know, the night before the big battle with the Vanir, and Conan can't sleep. And he's thinking about these men of Asgard, about how growing up, the prejudices of his people, he'd always been told that the Æsir were just no better than dogs, basically. I think what they say here is that
all his life, he had been told the Æsir were unprincipled animals, little better than the Vanir. They rutted like dogs, ate spoiled beef, and would kill any Sumerian for no more than his boots and blade.
And yet, here he is. He's spent the last few weeks with the men of Asgard, and he's grown to respect them. He's like, these are just regular dudes. These are really no different than my countrymen. They have a love of the outdoors. They love their families. They're honorable men. And then that gets him to wondering about the Vanir, because of all the bad shit that he's grown up with being told about the Æsir, the stuff that he's been told about the Vanir are even worse. That they're reavers, brigands, murderers, And he's starting to wonder if that is true as well. And it's got him kind of questioning things. But then eventually he goes to sleep because he doesn't want to stay up all night thinking about it. He's got a big battle to get to in the next morning. He doesn't want to get up late, be Mrs. Bus for the big battle. But I like that. I like that, you know, this scene and a scene that's coming up, I think they're doing a good job of pointing out that the people that inhabit this world, they're not good. They're not bad. You know, it's not like, well, here's the Vannermen. They are all bad. And here's the men of Asgard. They are all good. It's not black and white. Shades of gray. And I appreciate that they're making an effort here to point that out. After that, we have the battle between the Iser and the Vanir, Tyr's Reavers. And it doesn't last long before Tyr surrenders and offers a deal to Njord that, you know, take me, kill me. I hand myself over to you freely. I'm not going to fight it. Kill me, but leave my people alive. And again, Conan's like, well, what's going on here? This doesn't feel right. Of course, what he's actually feeling is that none of them know it, but the Hyperboreans are creeping up on him. He's watching this man surrender, their enemy. And he's the hairs on the back of his neck are standing up. And he thinks that he's getting this sense of danger because he thinks that Tyr is tricking them. But that's not the case. And then the Hyperboreans attack. And they are, I don't know, 9-10 feet tall, pale skinned. They basically are wearing a scrap of loincloth around their waists. Some of them have straps and bits of armor on their chests and their shoulders, but otherwise they're half naked. They're bare skinned. And then they have these helmets that cover their faces. And, you know, again, the Hyperboreans that we met in Conan the Barbarian number 3 over on the Marvel side, they were just regular dudes. You know, they were barbarians. They were like Sumerians or the men of Asgard or the Vannermen. But here, they appear to be the Uruk-hai from Lord of the Rings, because that's who they remind me of, especially with their helmets. And then we have this moment during the battle with the Hyperboreans where Tyr, who is tied up and all his men are tied up because they were going to take Tyr and his men back to their village. They were going to kill Tyr and then they were going to ransom off his men. But Tyr is begging Conan to let him free, to give him weapons. You know, that he and his men will fight at their side. And that's exactly what they do. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And we have the Iser and the Vanir fighting together against the Hyperboreans. And there's a moment, this might be my favorite bit in the issue. It's after we see Njord cut down. Tyr points out that he can see Sajarl. You know, he's like, hey, look, you got a couple of guys up there on the bluff. You know, if we do this and you get their help, we could escape, and that would be a good thing, right? Conan, however, he doesn't want to leave. Njord apparently is not dead at this point. He's been cut down. He's laying there bleeding on the ground, and Conan doesn't want to leave his side. He's ultimately standing above him, keeping these Hyperboreans away from him. And so when Tyr suggests this plan, this scheme, Conan can see the merit of it. He can see that it will work, but he doesn't want to leave Njord. And so Tyr says to him, go, Sumerian, I'll guard the Iser chief for you. And that's my favorite bit. Because again, I think it shows that despite the differences that people may have, they can still come together and do the right thing. That's the message of this issue. Then I like the bit at the end where we see the Hyperboreans taking all these men away. They're on these sleds. They're walking off into the ice and snow. There's a big snowstorm that they're walking into, and we're basically watching this as if the camera was placed right behind Conan's helmet that is laying in the snow. So his helmet, while it's not the center of the shot, it is in the foreground. It's the biggest thing in the shot as we're watching these Hyperboreans and their captives disappear into the snow. And all we're left with is the helmet, which again, for me, nails down the whole this helmet is a nod to the helmet that Conan was wearing in the Marvel run. Because while Conan holds on to the helmet in the Marvel run until issue number 6, and he obviously loses it here in the Dark Horse run in issue number 3, I still think, same thing. He starts out with the helmet, and then he ends up losing it at some point. And at least from what I remember, for the next three issues, he's not going to be wearing that helmet. Again, final thoughts. I mean, the art, what can I say? It's gorgeous. I'm going to continue to say that, you know, because I'm a really big fan of Cary Nord doing Conan. Of course, there's also, you know, I'm not sure why I didn't mention it when I talked about issue number one or even issue number two. I just started thinking about this yesterday, but this Conan run, while I would pick up a Marvel Conan book every now and then, if I was in the comic book store picking up my pull list and I would see a Conan book on the shelf that had an interesting cover, I would pick one up. Now, this was mid to late 80s. As we got into the 90s, I wasn't really a big fan of what Marvel was doing with Conan. It didn't interest me. It looked like they were, you know, trying to copy that the extreme stuff that they thought Image was doing and tried to put that in Conan. And it just didn't appeal to me. And so I dropped out of comics for a bit in the 90s, and I started to come back in the early 2000s. And when they announced this Dark Horse run, I was immediately entranced. I had to get these books. So I got it on my pull list. And so really, this is the first run of Conan comics that I started getting on a regular basis. And because of that, it is going to be a bit more special to me. And yet, I'm not really sure how far into it I got, because I feel like it wasn't that long after that I dropped out of reading comics for a while and didn't get back in for another couple of years. But yeah, even if it was just the first two issues, first three issues that I got, this was the first time I had been introduced with, you know, here's not only is it a new Conan book, because Marvel was releasing new Conan runs, right? Throughout the 80s and the 90s, up until they lost the license in early 2000 or something, but they kept releasing these miniseries and blah, 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 blah. But this was the first time in my lifetime that not only did we get a new Conan title, it was a restart. It was a reboot. It was from a different publisher. So yeah, it was a little bit more special to me. But that's it, folks. Those were my favorite bits, which of course means that we are at the end of our episode.
Everybody out.
So next week, we'll continue with the Dark Horse run, Conan number 4 from May of 2004, and it's called Gates of Paradise. And hey, if you don't want to wait a week, second level members of the Super Secret Steven Society have access to the next three episodes, in which I'm talking about issues 4, 5, and 6 right now. They're up there on the Society, and they are available. Join today by using the link in the show notes or go to secretsociety.hithercameconan.com. Second level memberships are just $2 a month, and all episodes are ad-free. Otherwise, until next week, folks, keep your swords close by, never stop treading them jeweled thrones, and most importantly, be nice to each other. Bye. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Hither Came Conan. Questions and comments can be directed to feedback@hithercameconan.com or come join us on social media. Just look for @ConanPodcast on Twitter and Blue Sky and @HitherCameConan on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate the show over at Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Donations to the show can be made at donate.hithercameconan.com or become a member of the Super Secret Steven Society and get episodes early and ad-free. Join now using the link in the show notes or go to secretsociety.hithercameconan.com. Memberships start at just $1 a month.
Many wars and feuds did Conan fight. Honor and fear were heaped upon his name. In time, he became a king by his own hand. This story shall also be told.
Just waiting for the furnace to kick on so I can have that going on in the background. That way I can remove that noise with my noise reduction. I need it back there so that I can sit here in silence for 15 to 30 seconds with the mic recording the room with the furnace going, so that when I select that bit of audio to, don't know, I can't remember what it does now. It's like selecting that bit of audio to tell Audacity that, hey, this is the background noise, so just remove all this from the background. Noise reduction. Blah, 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 blue, blue. So as I'm waiting, I'm just going to do pretend vocal exercises. Habba, habba, habba. Boo, la, boo, la. Red leather, yellow leather. Isn't that what you're supposed to say? Red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather. Boo, ba, 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 boo, ba, 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 boom, boom, boom. All right, I'm just going to get started, and I'll pause when the furnace kicks on. That's what I'll do. Hey, hey, here we go. Furnace kicking on. 3, 2, 1, go. Expressing a... Stop trying to speak quicker than you think. Bye, ba, ya. Sometimes I just need to do these nude. I nude to do. I want to be nude. That's not true. Sometimes I need to do just these freaking outbursts of, blah, you know, so I can just blah, get it all out of my head and my face. Back to the episode. Back to the matter at hand, which is an episode. Can't rap at all. Cat is climbing up on the table. Gonna lay down on my laptop while I record. Gotta wait for that cat to lay down. Conan agrees. Conan agrees. And soon the Icer and the Vanir are fighting side by side. And Conan agrees. And soon the Icer... Conan agrees. And soon the... I'm going crazy. Leaving the horns... All right, so before we get into my favorite bits, I wanted to... All right. Okay, so... okay, so... All right, before we... All right, so before we get into...
Just don't think I can move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Enough talk!
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.